Vin Scully has joined us on Sports Byline USA. In 1950, Vin, you joined Red Barber and Connie Desmond in the Brooklyn Dodgers radio and television booths, and you had an opportunity then in 1953 to do the World Series. And at that time, you were only 25 years old, and you became the youngest man to broadcast a World Series game. I have talked to Duke Snider and others about Ebbets Field and about the Brooklyn community. Tell me a little bit about your view of it and about the stadium itself, because you had the Polo Grounds, you had the Yankees and Yankee Stadium, and then you had the Bums, of course, over at Ebbets Field.
Well, first of all, in order to explain why I had the opportunity at that tender age in 1953, Red Barber was the senior announcer. In fact, I mean, he was the legendary Red Barber and well-deserved. However, he felt that after all the years of doing the World Series, he felt he should get more money. In those days, we received $200 a game. That's all. And Red felt that he had done so many of them that he wanted more money. And the people behind the broadcast, it happened to be the Gillette Safety Razor Company, and they did not agree with Red, so he was not going to do it. Connie Desmond, who was the number two announcer and a marvelous announcer, could easily have been a number one. Connie had had problems with Gillette in the past, so they were going to overlook him. And my phone rang, and all of a sudden, I'm offered the World Series in 1953. Well, it was an overwhelming offer, but I did not want to get caught in labor negotiations and cutting the legs out from Red and or Connie's consideration. So first I called Red and I explained, and he said, "Vin, I want you to accept it. You have my blessing. It has nothing to do with you. They are not going to do what I want, and so you should take it." Then I got the blessing from Connie, and then I called back to Gillette and said, "I'll be honored to do the World Series." And I was going to work with a favorite of mine and a wonderful guy, Mel Allen, who was the voice of the Yankees. The day of Game 1 of the World Series, and I had only done a sprinkling of innings on television during the year, and I can remember it as if it was 5 minutes ago, I had a big Irish breakfast. My mother always believed that breakfast was the most important meal of the day. And I had this big meal. The games were all in the daytime in those days. And I finished the meal and I excused myself, went upstairs to get dressed, and immediately threw everything up. It was nerves overwhelming me. But however, when I got to Yankee Stadium, all of a sudden the sounds and the smells and being with Mel calmed me down a great deal, and I was able to get through it. Now, in Ebbets Field, the Brooklyn fan related to the team more so, I think, than any other group of fans would relate to any other team for this reason. If you were around in those days, if you were around for, let's say, World War II, going back to the very early 40s, when they made movies or anything on the radio, the fella from Brooklyn was always a tough-talking, dem, D's, U's kind of guy. He was always the butt of jokes, somewhat of a comedian every time that he opened up his mouth. So what happened was the team became a representation of the fan. When the team excelled and won, the Dodger fan felt that he had won. It was the answer to the lordly spires of New York, whether the Yankees or the Giants. They were looked down upon as the trolley Dodgers. But if their team won, that was another story. So the Dodger fan was particularly close to his team. And in those days, most of the Dodger players lived right in Brooklyn, very close to Ebbets Field. They became definitely a part of the community, which you don't usually see. Players usually live rather far away from where they play. But that's one reason, or several, why the team meant so much to the fans. And then the third big reason was the ballpark. The Polo Grounds was like 460 some odd feet to center field. It was a large, large ballpark. Yankee Stadium, of course, was also extremely large. I think there was 481 to center. But at Ebbets Field, center field was 399. It was a smaller, more intimate ballpark. You became well aware, whether you were a player or a broadcaster, you were well aware of the fans individually. We saw people that we saw at every game, someone as colorful as a Hilda Chester who rang a cowbell. We're in the big ballparks, in all honesty, the crowds are almost like wallpaper. You certainly can't see individuals. But at Ebbets Field, you were well aware of who was in the ballpark.
Of course, you've been associated with a lot of memorable calls when you were back in Brooklyn. The 1955 World Series, the Dodgers' only World Series championship. You said, Vin, ladies and gentlemen, the Brooklyn Dodgers are the champions of the world. And then a year later, Don Larsen throws that perfect game in the 56 World Series between the Yankees and the Dodgers on October the 8th, 1956. And I've got it here in front of me. You said, got him. The greatest game ever pitched in baseball history by Don Larsen. A no-hitter, a perfect game in a World Series. Never in the history of the game has it ever happened in a World Series. And so our hats off to Don Larsen. No runs, no hits, no errors, no walks, no base runners. You've always had the capability of capturing the moment. Does that just come naturally? Did it come naturally to you? Or how did you approach what possibly could be a great moment in sports?
Well, I'm not sure. I think I've just been helped along. I think the Lord has helped me quite often. I really feel that way because it's nothing that you think of in advance at all. Back in those days especially when the Dodgers won their first World Championship, and as it turned out, their only one in the borough of Brooklyn, that was a tremendous emotional moment for me because I knew, I empathized with the players and their frustrations over the years. And after I said what sounds like so matter-of-factly, ladies and gentlemen, the Brooklyn Dodgers are the champions of the world, I never said another word. I could not have said another word. I was emotionally overcome, and I would have broken down and probably babbled and cried. It was that much of an emotion for me. So people during the winter would say, how could you have been so calm to just say, ladies and gentlemen? But that's not true. I was anything but calm. With Larsen, I took another good break I had. Here I am working with the great Mel Allen. And the way the games turned out, I was on the last half of the game when the Brooklyn Dodgers won the series. And I was on the last half when Don Larsen pitched the perfect game. And the difference being, although only 1 year in time, I was a little more emotionally equipped for the Larsen perfect game than I was for the Dodger World Championship, because I think you would understand I was not going to be emotionally overcome over a Yankee pitcher doing it to the Dodgers. So I was a little more clear-headed and calmer, and whatever you just said came out. Naturally, you can't possibly prepare or say anything ahead of time until it occurs.
Let me ask you about the team moving to the West Coast, leaving Brooklyn and moving to Los Angeles. How difficult was that for the Dodgers when they had to come West?
Well, I'm not sure for the team. I wouldn't want to speak for all the players, coaches, manager, front office people. I would say for me, it was bittersweet. I was leaving New York. I was leaving all my friends, my roots, my families. But it was sweet because I still had a job.
We've got Vin Scully with us, and we're talking about his career with the Dodgers. Of course, he has the longest tenure of any broadcaster with a single team in professional sports history, and we continue on Sports Byline.